around in the great big city. Fast money and the life will never show you no pity. Oh, I work hard trying to make my bones, but times have changed and I just got to move. Can't run away, can't run away, can't run.
Welcome to the debut broadcast of We Know a Guy Radio, a Bear Media Consultants production. This is where we talk about everything from organized crime to entertainment. Our guests will include former mobsters and retired lawmen, entertainers, writers, reporters, and successful businessmen and women. You can participate in tonight's show through our chat room or by calling in at 646-478-0982. My name is Denny Griffin, retired investigator and true crime author. Andrew DiDonato has the night off, so our producer, Kim Colton, is manning the switchboard and co-hosting as well. Kim, thanks for being here tonight.
Hi, Denny. Great to be with you. Before we get started, I want to mention that our friend and CrimeWire co-host Susan Murphy Milano has been diagnosed with stage 4 cancer. She is undergoing aggressive treatment, and her attitude is stunningly positive. Please keep Susan in your thoughts and prayers. If you'd like to keep up with how she is doing, please visit her website at www.conqueringcancer.me. You'll be able to read Susan's blogs, send her messages of support, and learn what you can do to help.
And tonight we have two guests who will be with us for the full hour. First, let me introduce Linda Scarpa, daughter of former Colombo crime family capo Greg Scarpa, who is also known as the Grim Reaper. Welcome to the show, Linda.
Hi, thank you very much.
And also with us is Billy Cotolo, son of slain Colombo underboss William Wild Bill Cotolo. Billy, nice to have you back on the show.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure, Denny. Thank you for having me.
I'd like to start with you, if I could, Linda. Could you please tell us a little bit about your dad? Who he was, both as a father, and you remember him as a father, and also about his business activities.
Well, as a father, he was a typical father at home. I mean, he was kind of strict with his rules. We had certain times that we had to be home. He cared very much for his kids and wanted the best for us. And his street life kind of took over his life because he got so overwhelmed with everything that was happening in the streets that it empowered him to the point where it affected his family life. And that's ultimately what destroyed our family is what happened to him in the streets. Mm-hmm. But as far as him as a mobster, he was one of the most feared, Colombo crime family members. He was different in the fact that he really didn't take orders too well, and he did things on his own. He basically did what he wanted. And that's what made him so scary, I guess, compared to other guys.
Yes.
Billy, can you tell us a little bit about your dad?
My dad, he wore two hats. He wore a family hat, as Linda just stated. We had discussions. He would ask me prior to our discussions, am I wearing the pop hat or am I wearing the skipper hat? And he would know how to sit down and react to the conversations accordingly. Our house was run probably systematically, just like Linda's was. My sisters had a time to be home, had to be home in the house. I had a little bit more leeway because I was the only boy of the house. Plus, I was out there doing things. But being involved with my father in the street he was who he was. He was a killer. I cannot change the things that he did in the past. And that's why people fear him most, because he would kill you at the drop of a dime.
Now both of your dads were with the Colombo family. Now, for people to understand, some of these families are quite big, and they have Cruz, and Bill, you correct me or Linda if I'm giving the wrong dope here, but in other words, it isn't like there's only five or six members or associates. Some of these families have some pretty large followings. So did your two dads know each other? Did they ever like work together or were they acquainted?
Yes, they were. They were acquainted years and years and years ago. Matter of fact, my father grew up liking Greg very much so. You know, Greg was very, you know, flamboyant and loud and, you know, he was just the type of guy you wanted to be around in that life. He was that type of guy. He drank and slept, you know, Omerta. And my father was pretty much the same way. It's just that things start to change. It becomes, you know, the high man starts out as a boss, then you have your underboss, then you have your consigliere, which is like your advisor or lawyer, then you have your captains, and then captains have soldiers, and soldiers have their associates, and the hand just reaches further and further and further. It gets bigger as it goes out, and it gets smaller as it goes to the top, if that makes any sense to anybody.
As far as the family is concerned, though, in the Colombo family itself, my father had a different crew than your father.
Yes, that's
what you meant, right, Dan?
Yeah, I was just kidding, because I think some people that aren't familiar with organized crime and the structure of the families think that there's only maybe five or six people involved, and just because you're part of the same family doesn't mean that you work together day in and day out. I mean, people have different crews, and you might know who the other guy is, but not necessarily work with them or be with them on a regular basis.
This is
true. My father was from 13th Avenue, and Billy's dad was from 11th Avenue. I know my father's crew was the Wimpy Boys crew. Go figure. And I don't know, did your father's crew have a name, Bill?
We were called the Friendly Bocce Club. So talk about two separate sides of the entity there.
Oh, God. Now, from what you both said, a mutual acquaintance of ours, Andrew DiDonato, a lot of times refers to some of the people we talk about as a mobster's mobster. Would you say your dads would maybe fall under that category, a mobster's mobster?
Well, I'll answer on her father. He definitely was a mobster's mobster, no doubt.
And I could say definitely Billy's dad was, and he had some swagger about him, too. He was definitely the don of mobsters. He was always dressed GQ. And see, my father was the type, he was, you know, jeans and casual. Billy's dad was always don and dapper. And, you know, they had different ways about them.
That's why all the girls that like me today, that's why.
What, Bill?
I said, that's why all the girls that like me today.
And what's so ironic about me and Billy actually talking is that our fathers were on opposite sides of the war and each other's targets. And at this point of our lives, me and Billy can actually sit down on a phone call, and we actually haven't met yet, but we've come to terms with you know what's happened in our lives. And our fathers, unfortunately, had to pay the ultimate price of that war, and we actually had to pay the ultimate price because we lost our fathers, and we're here now to talk about it.
I want to get into that Colombo War thing in a minute, but Linda, now Billy mentioned earlier that, you know, he knew what his dad did, and in fact, Billy was an associate or worked with the crew and so forth. When did you find out what your dad did? Did you kind of always know, or was there like a point where you knew, or how did that work?
Well, I always knew that he was different than the other dads, like my friend's fathers. He didn't have that same way about him that my friend's dads had. So I knew that there was something different about him, and I would ask him, Dad, you know, what do you do? And he would tell me that he was a professional gambler. And I never really understood that, but I would say, I would say in my mid-teens is when I knew what he was.
And what did you think? Now, you were a teenager then, so you,
I first found out I first knew exactly what he was doing when there was an attempted rape on me by a car service guy, and my father told me that the guy was never going to bother me again, that he took care of that guy, and I knew that he killed the guy, so.
Wow.
So that's when I knew that he was definitely not your typical dad.
You did the right thing.
Well, I don't know, but. No comment.
Did other kids, and this I guess goes for both of you, Billy, we'll start with you. You were in school and stuff, did your classmates and stuff kind of know who you were and who your dad was and so on?
Not right away. I started out, I think I found out I was about the fifth or sixth grade when I found out. I was fighting with the same kid just about every day, and literally every day, probably for like a year or so. And then one day he comes in, and, you know, I'm ready to fight him again, and he puts his arm around my shoulder. He tells me, he says, "Hey, Billy, we can't fight no more." And I thought it was a joke. He says, "Why can't we fight anymore?" I was like, "Well, my dad told me that you and I are friends now." I'm like, "What? Why are we friends?" Anyway, he turns around and gives me an answer. Like, "Hey," he's like, "Brother," he says, "we'll never have to work a day in our life." This was fifth grade.
Wow.
And, you know, that's when my wheels started to turn. I was probably around 13 when that happened. So, and then once I found that out, I didn't know fully what it meant, but I seen enough in movies and posters that my father had up in the house, and the way he started to dress, it was pretty much, the question didn't really need to be asked at that point.
And Linda, when, you know, were you still in school then, you know, like when in your teenage years, did your classmates know what your dad did, and did they treat you any different or anything, do you think?
Well, I was definitely treated different. I was a sophomore in high school when that happened with the car service, and, you know, people knew, I guess, just by word of mouth in the street who my father was. And, you know, as a kid, you kind of, especially a girl, it's different for Billy. He was a boy. For me, it was different because I'm daddy's girl, and I'm turning my cheek. I'm not really listening to this stuff. I'm not really paying attention. You know, I know my father's got some power. I know that I have pretty much everything I want, and I really wasn't listening. Or now I really wasn't wanting to hear what was happening.
Right.
You know, I was kind of turning my cheek to it. And then once that happened with the car service driver, there was no more turning my cheek to it. Now I was kind of forced into knowing this is what he was and this is what he did.
When you found that out, did your opinion or your feelings toward your father change at all, or did everything stay pretty much the same as far as that went?
You know, it's odd because you would think that I would maybe have some fear, but I didn't, and it just almost came kind of natural that this was who he was. I guess all of those years growing up with him in the house, being the way he was, and then finding out that way, for some reason it just all fell into place without me realizing.
Right.
You know what I mean? That's just the way it was, and I accepted it, and that's it. I moved on, and that's who he was.
If we can now, I'd like to talk about the Columba War.
Yes.
Billy, do you want to start and give the listeners a little background on exactly what the Columba War was, what it was all about?
Well, it started in 1991. A couple of coal mine Presco's guys, four of them. I know, there's at least four guys in the car. Make a long story short, Vic Arena, who was the acting boss at the time while Carmine was away in jail, he was Alley Boy, his son, Persico, was also in jail, but was due out soon. During this time, Vic Arena was running the game, was running the whole family. So when that little Alley Boy was set to come out, little Vic didn't want to hand the reins back over. So it became either you turn the keys over or we're going to take them from you. So that's what it came down to. You want it, come and get it. So, and that started the war. that side of the wall.
And now this is when different people that were in the family had to kind of make choices of who they supported. Now, your dad went with the arena camp?
Yes, my father backed with the arenas, Vic Arena Senior, and a lot of the guys out from Long Island. I don't want to throw any names out there; it's not important. But we sided with the arena faction. Vic was basically, we considered him the boss, and my father was the underboss. And again, Allie didn't like that, and that's why he had sent four guys to try to pick Vic off. If Vic didn't spot it that night, that car sitting by his house, they might have gotten Vic that night. You know, and if they did, who knows if the war even goes even further. You know, it may have even stopped right there. But, you know, fortunately for himself, he lived. He's away for the rest of his life in jail. But, it was pretty vicious. There were two separate sides. And, you know, on the other side was that of Linda's father's side, who backed the Perscos. And they had a tough crew, you know. They were a very tough crew.
So that's where your two fathers split was when the war came. They each backed a different side.
Right. Well, you got to remember something. You got to remember something too, Denny. You know, when you have a civil war break out within the family, the guys that are going to go on both sides, that they're going to go try to go after, are the guys that can hold the most power and the earners. Those are the two guys that they're going to try to hit first. So it became a game. You know, they would try to take one of our earners, and they would try to take one of our earners. And trying to get my father was one of their biggest earners. And to get Greg, rest his soul, you know, we would have had to go get Greg.
So, now, Linda, do you remember, you heard or found out that there was what we're calling the war had broken out? Were you aware of it?
Yeah, I was aware of it when they tried to do a hit on my father right in front of me.
They did?
Yeah, there was a hit that was supposed to be executed on my father, on my block where I lived. And that day I was leaving my house the same time as my father, and my father drove away in his car. I followed. Vans and a truck blocked the street. Guys jumped out, black masks, guns, everything, started shooting at the car right in front of me, got bullet holes in my car. I had he was not even one, my son in the car with me. And, that's how I found out the war started.
And you were almost a casualty.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Now, you know, that brings up something, you know, you always hear, when people are talking about mobsters and mob war, they say, well, they only hurt each other. The families are always off limits. There's never any innocent people get killed. It's always, you know, it's strictly that they kill each other. But that's not always true, is it? I mean, there are, like with Linda's case, there are bullet holes in her car, her son's in the car.
Listen, it doesn't exist anymore, Dennis. It doesn't exist. With the world, that's the way it's going around today, and people cooperating and getting caught and stuff like that, you know, women and children are eventually going to become part of the casualties in this fight against organized crime. It's only a matter of time. It's happened. You just haven't read that much about it. But I can tell you one notable one was with this Tommy Schiaccioli case that just finished. They were acquitted of orchestrating my father's hit. It's just a very simple thing that, you know, if they want to go out and kill women and children, it's going to happen. This guy Tommy Schiacci, he killed a nun by accident. But you still killed her. So, it is, Dennis, you just don't hear about the innocent that get hurt. There are a lot more innocent people. Mostly are by their own family, and then secondly, physically harmed out in the street.
Well, Denny, after that happened on the block, actually nobody got hit that day. No, you know, nobody was shot. And when my father got back to the house and saw that I was okay and my son was okay, he basically broke down. You know, he cried, and he looked at me, he looked at my mother, he held my son, gave him back to me, and then he said, they're all going to die, they're all going to pay for this. And he said, I don't care if they're with their mothers, their fathers, their brothers, their sisters, whoever I find, I am killing.
Mm-hmm.
He was on a mission after that. When they put me in harm's way and my son, he was on a mission, and he did not stop until he was not going to stop until he got who he wanted. And one of them was happening to be Billy's father, which he didn't get. But and Wild Bill.
Thank God.
And Vicarina. Right, I
yeah.
said, which
thank,
he didn't get.
Yeah.
And Vicarina also. Those were his main targets, which both he didn't get.
Right.
But he did get Nikki Black. And
yes.
He was happy about that
he
one.
He got Vinny hanging the Christmas lights.
Yeah, he got a few people. But I'm just saying that your dad and Vic was the main target.
Main targets, yeah, absolutely.
Now, how long did the war last? How long did that go on for?
I think it ended in the mid of 93. I'd say the very end of 93, a little bit of early 94, and then that's when they said, hey, right after Joe Scopo's killing in October of, I think that was 93, is when they said enough's enough, no more killing. And it's so sad because so many good men, honestly good men with good hearts, I understand we'll talk about organized crime, but if you just were to remove that just for one second, all the people that were killed were really good, down-to-earth people. It's a shame, and I'm sorry that I was a part of it.
And how many people died? Is there a body count on how many got killed?
At least 12. At least 12, and more than a couple of dozen arrested, and, who's still in jail time, doing jail time today? A lot of people got life sentences, some got 20 years, and it's, it's not that, that life is all about, listen, we run from the cops. They work in the day. We work at night. They walk by the lines. We walk by the cracks. It's their job to catch us doing what we're supposed to be doing best. So we never looked at, we were never afraid of law enforcement or anything like that. But when the war had hit, I can't tell you how much law enforcement came down on everybody. Literally everybody. Every time we would sit down at Wednesday night or Saturday afternoon, there'd be a bang at the door at the club. Agents wanted to come in looking for weapons. We'd invite them in. Sit down, have a cup of coffee. You cold? You hot? But
First, let me say this. Talking about this reminds me of the original movie Godfather 1, when they had the war there. Break out, and what was
yeah.
the saying, we're going to take to the mattresses and all that. Now, that was a Hollywood mob
yeah.
war. How
yeah.
accurate was that compared to what you, Billy, and you, Linda, saw and experienced during the real war? Was there any similarities from the movie to what you guys saw and felt? And
I can't
not
answer
really.
That. You're going to laugh because I never watched The Godfather.
Okay, you're right.
I lived it. I didn't need to watch it. So, Bill, you need to answer that one.
No, you see, what they did in the movies and the way you see it, I think a lot of the guys on the street got the ideas from the movie and then went out and wanted to become gangsters. But to compare it, yeah, it's comparable. It's definitely comparable. I mean, I sat down and watched episodes of Sopranos, and I'm sitting there going, holy shit, I feel like I'm on the fucking TV right now. Holy shit, I was in this conversation. So, yeah, you know what? Yeah, there was a lot of things that were very true, very, very true. So, and I got to say, it was one of the best-made movie. I can't say how many awards it won, but for being a gangster type movie, it did quite well. And, yes, it was very similar to things like that.
Okay, so now the war ends after a couple of years or so.
Mm-hmm.
And both of your dads made it through the war.
Yeah.
After the war ended, was when the truce was declared, or however they called it when they put a stop to it. There was a dozen or so dead people, some people in prison, and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Could you just wipe out the hard feelings? I mean, had there been some some hatred and some enemies made that lingered on even after the truce was declared?
Absolutely. You know, it's ironic you asked that question, Denny, because, you know, for someone as smart as my father was, how he could think that, you know, you can go kill 6 or 7 people of a rival faction and then 6 and 7 on the other side and then seem to think that it's going to go away and everything is fine, you're out of your fucking mind. And that's basically what I told my father when he told me it was all over. And I said, in all due respect, you know, he said, the kid shook my hand. He said, it's over, meaning Alley Boy. I'm like, that's it? That's it? That's it? Really? That's it? You know? I mean, I just couldn't buy into it. But, you know, I have my flag flies there, and I have to do what I'm told. If he says it's over, then he could say it's over, but they ain't going to cop a sneak on me. That's for damn sure.
Yeah, Linda, when the ceasefire, the truce was called, how did your dad react? I mean, you know, at one point he wanted to get Vic Arena and Billy's dad. Did he still harbor any grudges, do you know, or did he just let everything drop?
My father was in a different situation. My father had gotten himself into some other trouble, and he was already in prison at that point.
Yeah.
He was in prison, so, and he was also, you know, dying in jail, so.
Okay.
He actually, I don't know if he really held grudges, because on his deathbed, he signed a piece of paper that got one of the Persicos out of jail, saying that he wasn't involved in the war. So I really don't know if he held grudges. He held true to them.
Hey, you know, Linda, I was doing a little research, and I found one story, and I want to ask you about this, because the online version I saw was kind of unclear, and I don't know if this is just rumor or if it happened, and maybe you don't know either, but it talks about the Mississippi civil rights workers. Are you familiar with that story?
I'm not as familiar as my mother is, but I do know about it.
Okay, well, anyway, according to, I got this from an online site. I don't know if it was Wikipedia. I don't know where it was, but it says here, and I'll just read a little bit of it, and you can tell me what you think. In the summer of 1964, FBI field agents in Mississippi recruited Scarpa, your dad, to go to Mississippi to help them find missing civil rights workers Andrew Goodman, James Chaney, and Michael Schwerner. The FBI was convinced the three men had been murdered but could not find their graves. The agents thought that Scarpa, using illegal interrogation techniques not available to agents, might succeed at gaining the information from the suspects. Story goes that once Scarpa arrived in Mississippi, he was provided by FBI with a gun and some money to pay for information, and that he grabbed a Klansman and took him to a local army base called Camp Shelby and beat the guy and stuck a gun barrel down his throat, and the terrified Klansman revealed the location of the civil rights workers' graves. So that's the story that at least is online. Does that ring true to you, or what do you think of that?
Yeah, that sounds pretty accurate. But he also took my mother with him on that trip.
Oh, he did?
He did. He took my mother with him, and he told my mother.
Sounds like a hero. Sounds like a hero to me.
Yeah.
Well, at that time, he took my mother with him, and when he before he left on that mission to go, you know, terrorize this guy, he gave my mother that money and told her, if I don't come back, get on a plane and go home. So obviously he did come back, and they did find the body. So yeah, that whole story is true.
Wow. That's, you know, well, like Billy says, you know, I dealt with a situation today in which something I'm looking into, and the police are stymied on it. And I was wishing, I said, boy, if only you could, you know, I know the truth is out there, but the police can't get it. And I said, if only somebody could take a couple of these guys that know what happened and you know, take him for a little chat, similar to what happened at, with your with Greg Scarpa at Camp Shelby there in Mississippi.
I like the way you're thinking, Danny. I like where you're going with this.
Yeah, that techniques that agents couldn't use. Yeah, I'm not going to cry over that, I'll tell you that.
I hear you.
I guess those techniques work.
Kim, what are your thoughts, Kim? Oh, she must be in the chat room. Anyway, the you know, as we're talking here, and these are really fabulous stories, and I can't help but think as I hear these, being doing some writing, that there's books here. And I want to ask each of you, have either of you ever thought about writing a book? Billy, I'll start with you. Have you ever considered putting your story and your dad's story down on paper?
Matter of fact, yes. I was working on it prior until I was invited down to the opening of the Mob Museum. Once I got down there, I kind of felt like it was my duty now to embark on that journey and finish it up. So, yes, there is a book in the works. The day it's going to be out is still up in the air right now. But I have one thing coming out on the 25th of next week. It's called Mobster Confessions on the Discovery Channel. I think it's 9 o'clock. Let me see, 9 o'clock Central, nine o'clock Central. I don't know what time it is over there on the other side, but anyway, it's a 3-hour difference. Next week on Tuesday, the 25th, it's called Mobster Confessions. Don't miss it. It's going to be a great show, Denny.
And Billy, I have for the listeners, I have some news that they're going to love. If I didn't get edited out, I'm going to get a little FaceTime on your episode a couple of minutes.
All right. That sounds good to me, brother. It sounds good to me.
Of course, I might be on the cutting room floor. You know, I have a radio face, so maybe they didn't want me in there.
Hey, listen. You bet. Listen, just bring the fucking coffee, please, Danny. You bring the coffee. Nobody else. That's all your job. Please, don't let nobody else touch it.
Okay. And Linda, have you thought about doing something with your story and your dad's story?
I'm actually working on a book right now. I have a ghostwriter. I also have an agent that has it being shopped right now at the publishing houses. Her name is Jane Dystel. And, I started it. It's kind of hard to do because it's rehashing and reliving everything that's very hard to relive. So, but I am working on it.
Yeah, is there anything else you have going or anything else you'd like to say while you had a minute?
Me?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I am also trying to get a some type of a movie done. I don't know. I have this entertainment, Dan for Entertainment. He's shopping a movie or some type of a series. But I don't know what's happening with that right now. That's also in the works. Everything's just out there right now. I don't have any, you know, solid answer for that.
Well, that's the way those people work. That's the way they work. That's the way they work.
But, I have...
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Linda. I'm sorry.
No, you can finish.
Oh, no. I was just going to say we got a caller on the line, so anytime, Denny, you want to bring him on, it's our friend Mike from Canada.
Well, let's bring Mike on right now. I'd like to hear that accent.
Okay. I know. I love it.
Yeah. Hello, everybody. How is everybody tonight?
We're good, Michael. Yeah. Mike, it's my man. It's my man from Canada. It's Mikey A. We call him. How you doing, Michael?
Hey, Billy. Hey, Demi. And hello to also Linda.
How are you?
Very good, thanks. I just wanted to talk to the lady first, Linda.
Yeah.
And actually, it was ironic. Just on television today, they featured a show that featured the Areno family, and they were just backing up exactly what you said. When your father went to war, they all ran for their lives, literally. I think the whole family's hid out some unknown place for about 3 months, and then decided to come home. But more important, I want to talk to you about. But you were on the show last week, I think. I put it on my visa. I think it was it Married to the Mob? I think it might have been on the ID channel.
I Married a Mobster.
Yeah, that's what it was, yeah. And that was on the ID channel, I think, up here in Canada. We get a Discovery channel, they have the Discovery ID channel. But
Oh, nice.
You know, so you know more about me than I know about you then.
Exactly, yeah. But Linda, that show, I watched a lot of shows, a lot of true crime shows, and I know the boys and stuff. And that show was so realistic that...
You saw my episode or you saw my mother's? Was it Little Linda or Big Linda?
It was one with Linda, I'm pretty sure it was...
We're both Linda. It would be the younger version.
Well, did she look older or did she look younger?
I'm not 100% sure, but it was so realistic. You were talking about losing your brother as well.
That's me.
Yeah, exactly. And that was so touching. I could feel your pain
really.
Was real, even today watching that show. And if anybody still wanted to be in that kind of life after watching that show, it's got some serious issues. Because
I agree.
That was so touching. That show was really right on the mark, and hopefully people learn something by it because it was so realistic. It was so un-Hollywood. As close as you get to the real deal. And I just want to tell you that was one of the great episodes on there.
Oh, thank you. That was raw. That was really hard for me to do.
Yeah, but I know. Yeah. I had the same incident with my program that's coming up on Tuesday. It was draining. It was just so emotionally draining. I can't tell you, like, I had to keep stopping to put more makeup on because, you know, you get a little flustered, you get mad, you get sad, and get choked up, and it's tough. You're going through your whole life in the course of maybe one or two episodes, and, you know, when it's cut up and it's all put together, it looks great, but nobody sees how much work and how hard it was to put that, you know, that thing together. So I give, you know, my applause to Linda because that the show was phenomenal, and I think you did a hell of a job, so you better write a book.
Oh, yeah, Linda, I agree, too. And I wanted to know, when I talked to you before the show, the one thing that, you know, we were talking about stuff, and I just thought, I wanted to ask you, do you feel any resentment? And I was off the grid for a while. I have to tell you, I was off the grid with the phone, with the show for a bit because I was answering phone calls. But I don't know if this question was asked and answered, but... Do you feel any resentment?
I have a lot of resentment. I have a lot of anger. I suffer from different bouts of happiness, depression. You know, it's really difficult to get through the things that I've been through and try to exist in this world today as, you know, a normal person. I have kids that I have to take care of, so they keep me going and they keep me strong. But if it wasn't for them, I don't know where I would be because the stuff that I've seen, I wouldn't wish on my worst enemy. And that's basically it. So, yeah, I have a lot of resentment. There's some days that I cry because I hate my father, and then there's some days I cry because I love him. And it's just a whole whirlwind of mixed emotions that, mm-hmm. you got to live with.
No, if I may, I'm sorry.
No.
Things, you know, are different between a father and a son and a father and a daughter. I can feel just by hearing her speak the pain that she's been through. And I was there firsthand to acknowledge, to know of the pain that she was going through. And to not have resentment, that would make, I don't want to say a fool, but it would kind of make you not normal if you didn't have any type of resentment, Linda. So, you know, you're on the right path, honey. You just keep plugging along. I got your back.
I'm glad that we came to terms with each other. You know, that's another thing that helps is that, you know, talking to Billy and talking to people that I never thought I would speak to in my life. You know, at one point I hated Billy, and I thought, hey, Dad, you know, I thought you were on the hit list, you know, Bill. I'm glad that you're still here today, and I'm glad that me and you can speak about this. And, you know, me and you probably suffered the same, we're on the same roller coaster ride, I'm sure.
Yes, you're right.
You know, and it's really not an easy thing to go through. Life is just, it's just not the same. And dealing with everyday struggles, it just makes it that much harder to go through because we have this in front of us all the time. You can say, you know, I can look at my kids and smile because they make me smile, but it's still right there in front of me. Those shootouts and seeing my father come home shot and full of blood and the stuff that I see, and that it's always right there. You know, I go to sleep, I have a nightmare, it lingers. You know, those types of things are never going to go away, no matter how much I try. So,
and that's,
you know,
why Linda, you know, Linda's got to get on board and start to help us, you know, when we start doing our speakings. You know, she can speak firsthand as a daughter about not only does that life ruin La Cosa Nostra, but it ruins the normal part of life. Meaning something like the case that we're speaking about right here, talking about Linda. Look what it did to her. It ripped up her life apart. Now the poor girl doesn't know which way is up. I don't think that's fair. You know, that just gives you an idea how backwards that life is.
You know, Billy, let me just stop for a minute here. Because you and I have talked on different programs, and I don't think tonight we finished up letting any new listeners know what happened with your dad. I mean, we kind of stopped at the truce in the Colombo War, in that if everything was supposed to, everybody was supposed to let bygones be bygones.
Yes.
And you said that you, when your dad said that, you didn't agree with that. You felt he was maybe being a little bit naive about that. So tell us what happened down the road with your father.
Oh, what happened was, you know, every Sunday, I'll give it a quick story. Every Sunday, we'd go out to his house in Santa Ana and have dinner. And then when we were done having dinner, he would take me next door to his house because he had his best friend lived next door. And he says, come on, we'll go next door, kick your ass in a game of pool. So we laugh. We go downstairs. We grab a couple of cigars out of the humidor. And he says, what hat am I wearing? I'm like, skip a hat. He's like, all right. He says, all right, Dad, what's on your mind? I'm like, well, I don't understand. I'm like, how all these people got killed, and that's it, it's done, it's over with. You know, innocent people, guys that had nothing to do with nothing, you know, gone, and it's completely forgotten about. Yeah, he tells me. Yeah, you know, I spoke to the kid, everything's fine. And I looked at him like, as if he had 10 heads. Like, my dad was never like that. My dad would have been like, don't worry, we'll let him sit, let him think everything is good, and then I'll kill him when I get a chance. Unfortunately, they were thinking that, and that wasn't even on my father's radar. So they sent for him on a meeting, which was supposed to take place on a Thursday. They bumped it up to a Wednesday, so he didn't have a chance to back out. And supposedly, the meeting that he was supposed to be going to was a high-level meeting where they were supposed to be inducting a couple of new members. And so he had to be there. And that was it. I never heard from him since.
So, and that was probably as a result of some leftovers from the Colombo War?
That was the last remnant of the war.
Now, but you ended up helping the government find the kill. Well, you pretty much knew who did the deed, even though they hadn't recovered your dad's body at that point. But they ended up in at the time, rather rare case of, thanks in part to the information you developed, of getting murder convictions against two of the players. Even without a body, and that's rather rare when you haven't found a body to get murder convictions.
That's true. Today, it's almost unheard of. But there was enough. They had enough evidence of tapes that I have made of them speaking ill about, you know, my goddaughters. They pretty much buried themselves. I really didn't have to do much. And it was kind of funny at the same time. I don't mean funny, ha-ha. I mean funny, ironic, because, you know, here you guys just killed this guy's father. In the same night, in the same breath, you're telling him, don't worry about it, Buffy. I'm going to keep you with me. You're tough, you're strong, you're smart. Don't worry about it. And once I heard that, that's when I knew for sure that it came out of my own backyard. So when they came by my father's house just about maybe a week and a half later, two agents got out of the car, and I told you, they waved a badge. I didn't think it was a cop. I had my pistol and my rope, and they were waving a badge. And I kept the pistol in my thing anyway, and I says, how can I help you? And they says, well, we just wanted to give you our condolences. So all of a sudden, I shut the hose off. I'm like, do you know something I don't know? And they looked at each other. I went, well, Billy, listen, we're getting words out there that, you know, they might be looking to hurt you too. I'm like, you know what? Well, let them come do what they got to do. I'm good. And then I stopped. In a matter of 4 seconds, I turned around and I said, you know what? Yes, I will help you find him. But I am not wearing a wire. I didn't ask them for no money. I didn't ask them to move me. I didn't ask them for nothing. I just said, I will help you find my father. That's my job as his son to know where he is. And if he's not here, I'm going to just, not until my life is over, until I find him. And that's what set me out on my route. My first night out, I talked into the recorder. I said, hey, guys, what should we call this thing? And I'm talking to myself as if, like, the recording device was going to answer me back. So I said, what are we going to call this thing? I said, I know what we're going to call it. We're going to call this thing Operation Payback. Bam, that was it. That's it. The wheels were on. It was off. So.
And it was successful, like I said. And these guys are both behind bars as we speak, right?
That is correct, Denny. The both guys, the main characters, Alley Boy Persico and John Jackie DeRoss, are serving consecutive life sentences. But the dirtbags actually carried out the hit. One guy fled. That's how they found my father, because they told us where he was buried. And the other two guys that were being held, this guy Tommy Gioli and this little Dino Saraceno, they just finished their trial. They wound up being, not guilty of the murder of my father. So even though that they did the digging and this, that, and the other thing, they didn't give a fuck. They found them innocent, and that's it. So.
Wow. I guess it's just something you have to, you know, live with. I mean, it you know, what's done is done. But you know, you don't know how something like that happens. But anyway,
I wonder what would happen if I ever bumped into him, like in a pizzeria or something. I wonder how that conversation would go.
Yeah, right.
I had a choice, man. I'm sorry, Denny. I know Andrew's sitting home listening to this. He's probably laughing his balls off right now.
Operation Payback. I like that, Billy.
That's what it was, pal.
Oh, that's good.
Denny.
Yeah, Mike.
I'd like to say one thing to Billy before I let you go here. And basically, I think we're going to have to have an old-fashioned type sit-down. Your story is going to be told on the Discovery Channel on June 25th, correct?
That's correct, pal.
Yeah, that's correct, yeah. And I'm mad about that because we don't get that Discovery Channel in Canada. It's different programming, but we'll get it in a few weeks. I checked in that already.
You got to be kidding me.
I went online today, and it's not the same. We have different parts of Discovery Channel, and they said you will get it eventually because we saw the show with Linda on it last week, and they will have that show coming on
good.
A little later on. But what I wanted to talk to you about, I guess a friend of yours, he's not a friend of ours, as Donnie Brasco would say,
yeah.
And he lives in Las Vegas and hides out in New York City and tells me he's going to be on the show, and I'm your number one brother, and I'm not on the show. What's up with that? Does Danny know anything about that?
First I've heard of it.
First I heard of
too.
It.
Yeah. Okay. Wait, what did he say?
Oh, this guy had told me that he might be on the show with you, and I thought, me being your number one brother up from Canada, that I'd be on the show, but I guess he's...
I see what you're saying, yes.
He's on the show.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about now. I said that I have I definitely have a radio face, but they might let me have a few seconds there on Billy's episode, so I've got my fingers crossed that comes about.
Well, put it this way. If it wasn't me, I'd want it to be you, Denny. So
okay.
There you go.
Hey,
Mike, Mikey.
Mike.
Don't worry, Mikey. Listen, even if you don't get it, if they send me a hard copy, I'll send it over to you, pal.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, no, we'll definitely keep in touch, and I'll be looking at it. And very nice talking to you all again. And
thank you, Mike.
Care, Linda, and I'm
thank
sure
you.
The right things are going to happen to good people. Okay.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you
right,
thanks, so much, Mike.
Okay. Okay, have a good evening, everybody.
You
yeah.
too, brother. Stay hey. Well. I'll talk to you
yeah.
soon.
You bet. Bye now.
Linda.
Yeah.
Now, we left off a little bit ago talking about, you know, at the end of the Colombo War, and your dad was in prison at that point. You said he'd run into some other issues. So let's pick back up there. Your dad went to prison, and then take us through what happened with your dad.
Well, basically what happened was my brother had gone into some trouble in the streets, and my father was already on an ankle bracelet, wound up leaving the house on the bracelet, and went and had a shootout a couple of blocks away from my house. He got shot in the eye. He lost his eye that night. My brother's friend was shot in the head, and he lost his life 2 days later. And that was the last that my father was in the streets. He went to jail after that, and that's where he died.
So he died in prison?
Yeah. He died in prison. He died of complications due to the AIDS. He refused food and water at, you know, during the last week of his life. He didn't want any more food or water. I guess he just gave up, and he couldn't take any more. So.
So, you know, we're talking about the you know, the mob life and so forth. Now, you both of you have some pain, you know, emotional trauma and physical in some respects. You both of your fathers ended up dying as a result of involvement with the mob and so forth. So you've got your lives that have suffered. Their lives were lost. And I think it was Billy mentioned earlier that, and Andrew DiDonato says all the time, there's really no upside. Do you
no.
agree with that?
There is no upside to that life at all.
No. None at all.
There's nothing but death and loss, and there's just nothing good that comes out of that life.
And it's usually your best friend. Now, you know, I can't think of one circumstance that I would want to be in that I can say I would want my best friend to kill me. Not to say I would want to be in that situation by anybody, but by my best friend of all people, and that's what that life's about. And we've spoken about this before, Denny. It doesn't just kill, you know, the La Cosa Nostra life. It don't just kill Omerta. You know, the hell with Omerta. You know, it's killing, it's touching real families' lives now. When you have a girl on your show like you do right now, a girl that had nothing to do with nothing, she was on her way to wherever she was going, had her baby with her, it was a beautiful day out, and look what could have happened. All because of too much ego, because of money and power. Mm-hmm. Who wants to live that life anymore? And anybody that does, they got to be a mutt. And if they're not a mutt, they're a rat already. So you can put the two together. They're a mutt and a rat, because eventually they're going to rat. So that's my take on that where this life is going.
Yeah.
You know, and I was talking with Andrew last night, in fact, and he mentioned that the mob is not today what it was years and years ago. There's been an awful lot of changes in the mob.
There's not, from what I understand, people are telling me there's not even any more ceremonies. There's no social clubs that there's mandatory meetings to be at. You know, all that fluff and stuff that the FBI used to love and get tape after tape after tape, it's gone. You know, you're going to catch them walking in and out of a place, getting into a car. You're going to show association. But you're not going to have any of that unless you get a rat to tie it all together. And then you will have a case. So, you know, out there, all you have is these young punk kids doing and selling drugs, doing push-ins, robbing innocent families. I mean, the stuff that I'm hearing, it's nauseating. It really is nauseating. If my father or our father were alive today, they'd probably be sitting there saying, or looking up saying, thank God you the two of you are so far away from that life.
Yeah. Change a negative to a positive.
Hey, listen, they give us lemonades. We're going to make lemonades, right?
Tim, do you have any questions?
She left us again.
No, you. Do you have any questions?
Oh, I thought he said Kim.
Oh, no. I'm
sorry.
Kim, did you get to see the song?
Yes, I did. And I do want to bring up in our last few moments here, I want to bring up the video tribute, and I'm pasting it again into the chat room so everybody can see the tribute that G Fella did for Linda. And it is fantastic. Linda, please tell us about this.
I've been a fan of G Fella.
No, wait, time out. He's with me now, this kid. So
G Fella's with
whatever.
You?
He's with me.
No, he's with me.
Yeah, I'm with
he's
you.
He's with
yet.
Me.
Go
we're
going
to have a sit-down about this.
No, I'll be with you. I'm fine. Dad.
G Fella is... I've actually been a big fan of G Fella's for a long time. And he did a tribute song for me, and it means a lot to me, and I just wanted to bring him up tonight and thank him. And he's great. And he's all about positive energy and bringing a negative to a positive, and he says it in tribute. And I just want to give a shout out to G Fella because G Fella is the man.
I'll give a shout out to G Fella too. I hope I meet you, my man. I heard a lot about you.
There you go.
Amen.
Well, I've got it posted up there, and it's at www.youtube.com/watch? Y equals M, capital A, capital C, capital W, small e, 6, capital R, capital D, capital P, capital O, capital E. And it is fantastic. Linda, I'm so glad you brought that to everyone's attention. I've posted a couple of times in the chat room, so hopefully everyone will see it.
Well, they could just go to YouTube and type in G Fella and Little Linda.
G Fella and Little Linda. Yeah, there you go.
That sounds
there
a lot
go,
easier
baby.
Than the capital I dropped the four.
Yeah.
I'll tell you too.
G Fella and Little Linda on YouTube.
There
hey,
you go.
Hey, listen, Danny. Listen, I think we're gonna have to make her part of the Goodfella family. I think she's got the, goyons to work with us.
Well, I think she has too. If you're interested, Linda, we'd like to have you
okay,
work with us through Bear Media.
I got to be the boss, though.
You got to be the
boss. Right.
You sure can. Yeah,
you could be my boss. You got it.
I'm just joking.
No, you're not.
I'm the boss chick.
I had a great time tonight, guys. I really did. You guys are great.
Wonderful.
Well, listen, it's really been a very, I hesitate to say entertaining, but informative might be a better word,
yeah.
to hear it, and especially you two, Linda and Billy, who were kind of like a mongoose and a cobra, you know, kind of enemies, or didn't
yeah.
particularly care for each other prior to this, so that is a great thing, and I think you said earlier, Linda, when you can... you know, kind of talk it out and let things go, and you know, one less grudge to hold. Or
you know, Danny, the first time me and Billy spoke, it was like we knew each other 100 years, and we didn't hold any grudges at all towards each other.
None, not zilch. In my heart, I said to myself, you know, how would I be able to hold the grudge against somebody that I know didn't want to hurt me? You know, I understand her dad, whatever. That was part of the life. But to see that our paths are heading in the right directions where we want to be better people and do the right thing And we don't want to be forced into situations like we were. Like when I was younger, when I didn't have no money, I had to go out to do this, and make money. Well, it's not like that no more. Now we go out, we talk about the bad things about that life and let these younger kids understand that it's the wrong way. You know, I don't care how big we make the sign, how red we make it. It's the wrong way. So we got to keep getting that out there. We really, really do. That's what's most important. It's bigger than all of us.
Well, that's a good note to close on, a good positive note. And we're out of time. We're going to have to wrap up. Thank you so much, Linda and Billy, for being on tonight. And I hope you'll come back. We'd like to do another program with you.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, thank you.
Kim?
I'm here.
No, Kim?
I'm here.
Well, anyway, thanks everyone for listening, and please join us July 18th for another installment of We Know a Guy Radio. And don't forget to check out BearMediaConsultants.com, the place to go if you want to get connected. Until next time, God bless, good night, and stay safe. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Linda,
good night.
Thank you, Linda and Billy. You guys
thank
are
you
great.
So much. You guys enjoy the rest of the week.
Thanks.
Thank you.
All right, love you. I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks,
okay,
Mike.
Bye.
Thanks for calling in.
Bye. Mike.